Support for WMNF comes from our members and the Straz Center, presenting the National Geographic Live Speaker Series. The next installment is Ocean Soul with Brian Scarry, underwater photographer, Tuesday, January 24th at 7 p.m. More at strazcenter.org or 813-229-STAR. I'm Duncan Strauss, really delighted to bring you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll speak with Bob Barker, the retired host of The Price is Right, who in recent years has underwritten a huge array of animal welfare organizations, projects, and programs. First, though, as always, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune, this one by an animal band. This is The Eels with Little Bird here on Talking Animals.
Little bird hopping on my porch. Know it sounds kind of sad, but what's it all for? Right now you're the only friend I have in the world, and I just can't take how very much. Goddamn, I miss that girl. Little bird, you look alright. I'm sure it's not easy getting through your night. So tell me this can't be how it's gonna end. Tell me my heart somehow. Dear God, what's gonna mend? Guess you're right. I can't let it take me out without a fight. But right now I can't see making sense of this world. I just can't take out very much. Goddamn, I miss that girl.
That's The Eels with Little Bird, an animal song to ease us into today's edition of Talking Animals. My name's Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Bob Barker, the retired host of The Price is Right, who over the past several years has emerged as a major philanthropist in the animal welfare world, underwriting an array of organizations and projects, from encouraging and funding the teaching of animal law at the nation's top law schools, to providing the monies for Paul Watson and the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society to purchase a new ship to combat Japanese whaling, a campaign, by the way, that's underway as we speak. We'll discuss various aspects of this and more with Bob Barker in a few moments here on Talking Animals. And as usual, we'll also welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or by email at dj@WMNF.org. Also, a bit later in the show, we'll step into the comedy corner, which involves animal comedy. We'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a David Bowie Best of CD, a bonus follow-up to last weekend's three-night Bowie extravaganza. By all accounts, a fabulous success. Congrats and thanks to everybody involved with that. And we'll speak briefly with Libby Boussalas, a member of the Talking Animals family, about her decision to go vegan starting this very week. Well, so much later, it's after Talking Animals. We'll be sitting in for Scott Elliott doing the All Souls edition of It's the Music today from noon to 3 p.m. right here in WMNF. Right now, though, it's time for the Animal News and Announcement segment, a look at items of interest in animal news as well as announcements of local events on the horizon. Produced, as always, by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department. Our first item sort of hooks into last week's conversation with Deborah Nelson, the Pulitzer-winning reporter who wrote the huge expose on Ringling Brothers for Mother Jones magazine. And, of course, we hooked that directly to the fact that Ringling was in town in Tampa last week. So in the wake of that, various things, including that folks planning similar demonstrations and protests to those that happened in Tampa this past week are gearing up to do much the same in Pensacola. So that'll be at the Pensacola Civic Center, and those will be held starting Thursday, tomorrow, January 12th at 5:30, again at Friday the 13th at 5:30, Saturday two times, 12:30 and 4:30. And Sunday the 15th at 12:30 p.m. as well. You can go to 850demo.webs.com. People send me some of this information. Seemed a little nervous. The woman sending me this information didn't want her name shared, and the person who was organizing this didn't want her name shared. So again, maybe speaks to the might of the Ringling juggernaut. But you can find out a lot more by going to that website, and of course they refer to various other pieces of information, including our interview and Deborah Nelson's piece, and something we didn't even really get into last week, and actually I'll probably touch on it maybe with Bob Barker later, is the this new bill that was introduced, the Traveling Exotic Animal Protection Act, and which would certainly make a huge difference for all of us who are concerned about animals and performance, circuses in particular. So, anyway, that's, again, the website is 850, the numerals 850demo.webs.com. Follow up and get more information if you're in or anywhere near Pensacola and want to get involved in helping get the word out and alert people to what goes on sort of behind the scenes at such circuses. And a further suggestion that issues and people within the animal welfare world often connect to each other, our next story deals with Sea Shepherd's current campaign to end Japanese whaling in the Southern Ocean. Again, something Bob Barker couldn't be more directly involved in helping and supporting. This is Dateline Canberra, Australia. Japan has agreed to release without charge three Australian activists who boarded a Japanese vessel off southwest Australia as part of a campaign to stop whale hunting in Antarctic waters, Australia's Attorney General said Tuesday. The three men boarded the security ship Shonan Maru No. 2 on Sunday as it tailed the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society's flagship to Steve Irwin. Attorney General Nicola Roxon said the two governments were negotiating details for safely offloading the three men. They're all from Western Australia State. Quote, we are pleased that the Japanese government has made a decision that these men, three men, won't be charged and will be released. But we can't be confident that will happen next time. If people take action, take the law into their own hands, she added. Australian officials had spoken to the men and all were well, she said. Retrieving them posed challenges. Obviously, the logistics are difficult when you're in open seas. So, again, we'll be tracking that and other things going on with our friends at the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. This comes from Change.org. NBC plans to air a Super Bowl commercial that uses greyhound racing to show how fast Skechers' new sneakers are. But an undercover investigation has revealed that the Arizona track that serves as a backdrop for the commercial is notorious for what's called here extreme animal cruelty. And with over 100 million viewers expected for Super Bowl, the next Super Bowl, though, animal advocates fear the ad will effectively whitewash an industry so dependent on animal cruelty that it's outlawed in 38 states. Grey2K USA recently published findings of an undercover investigation that exposed the Tucson Greyhound Park's shocking cruelty. Now the group has started a petition on Change.org asking NBC not to air Skechers' commercial during the biggest American sporting event of the year. So to find out more about Tucson Greyhound Park and what the apparent conditions are there, and to either sign the petition and or take other action, you go to change.org. Here's something a little brighter and happier. We always love it when kids are getting involved in helping animals. We certainly had some young kids on the show over the years, and I was struck when I found this story. When Mia Oliveira turned 7 on January 8th last year, she decided she didn't need a big party for herself, so she threw one in support of local animal shelters, asking party guests to bring donations in lieu of presents. Turning the Matapoiset hair salon where her mother works into a donation drop zone, Mia planned her 8th birthday on Sunday to be bigger and better than last year. For Mia, who lives in New Bedford with her parents, a cat named Tutu, and 2 fish tanks full of fish, animals are something to get excited about. Quote, "I like animals because they are cute," Mia said. "And a lot of them are cuddly and soft, so that's good too." The idea of foregoing birthday gifts for herself in favor of supporting the animals was entirely Mia's idea, said her mother, Tara Oliveira, who works as a hairdresser at Hair Unlimited. She came up with the idea all her own, Tara says. She's anything about animals anyway. When it came time to plan her party, all she said was, "I have to help the animals." So last year, when time came for her birthday party, Mia got in touch with Humane Society and Shelter in Dartmouth to see what they may need from the shelter's wish list. Mia created her own list for donations, which she sent out along with the party invitations. This year, Mia expanded her fundraiser with donations going to the shelter in Dartmouth, as well as towards It's All About the Animals in Rochester. Go, Mia. Locally, let you know about a few things coming up the next couple of days or so, a few days. Friends of Strays are presenting a low-cost vaccination clinic this Saturday, January 14th, from 2:30 p.m. to 4 p.m., That'll be at 3660 Gandy Boulevard in Pinellas Park. And you can find out more about that and how it works and how you can get involved by going to friendsofstrays.com. And I mentioned this last week. Want to mention again that Sue Pike, the so-called animal talker, again, you've perhaps heard her on E-Love's show regularly, and we had her on Talking Animals a while back, and she's not based in the area, she's based in New York, in fact, but periodically does come in to present training sessions and other things, so there'll be another one of those coming up starting January 14th. She'll be in the Tampa and or Clearwater area from the 14th through the 22nd, and again, there'll be all kinds of training sessions, other sorts of sessions, and you can find out more about that and get information if you'd like to participate by going to SuePike, P-I-K-E, energy.com. SuePikeEnergy.com. A bill introduced by Florida Senator Mike Fasano proposed to have all persons convicted of an animal abuse offense register with the State Animal Abuse Registry, which would be available for public inquiry on the Internet. This bill would come into effect October 1st, 2012. The bill would ensure that a person convicted of an animal abuse offense would be registered with the Animal Abuse Registry, and that each person would have to update his or her registration information annually. This would mean that each time he or she moved from one residential address to another, the registry would have a record. Each person would have to pay a fee annually, which would be used to pay for the administrative costs of maintaining the registry. Anyone who fails to pay the animal's administrative fee, fails to register, or fails to update critical information would then face a new charge and face new penalties. So you can find out more online by searching Senator Fasano. It's Mike Fasano, F-A-S-A-N-O. All right, if we have time later, we'll come back to some more, but right now it's time to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which, as always, of course, involves animal comedy. This is Tom Shalhoub with a piece called Animal Shows on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
I like my animal shows, right? You like the animal shows? Guys like animal shows, right? Come on, we work all day, we want to go home, we want to watch animals eat other animals. It relaxes us. I don't know why. I've noticed something. I watch these shows all the time, though. Don't they always try to make you feel guilty? Just for being human? They give you that human guilt trip at the end of the show. No matter what species of animal it is, they always come in with a deep voice at the end of the show when the sun is setting. The guy said, the snow leopard has but one natural enemy. Man. Like, I'm killing the snow leopard. I don't even know what it is. I saw this the other night. I got home on TV. This is what's on TV. The condor. The condor is flying in slow motion over the Grand Canyon. And the guy with the deep voice is like, the condor used to have the Grand Canyon to himself until the white man came. I'm like, oh, you gotta make it racial, huh? Like, the condor cares about that? Like, there's some black guy hiking in the Grand Canyon, the condor's like, you're okay, dude. It's the white man I got a problem with.
All right. That was Tom Shalhoub with a piece called Animal Shows, taken from his album Overconfident. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to speak with today's guest, Bob Barker. Overall, he's perhaps best known as the host of The Price is Right, a job he held for some 35 years. But if you care about animal welfare, you may consider Mr. Barker to be equally well known as the philanthropist who has underwritten a staggering array of projects, programs, scholarships, from establishing animal law courses at the nation's top law schools to helping Captain Paul Watson, the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, purchase a ship to further and help more effectively combat Japanese whaling. There's more, much more, but let's talk with the man himself about this, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome back Bob Barker to Talking Animals. Good morning, Mr. Barker.
Good morning, Duncan. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you making the time to join us. We spoke on the show about 5 years or so ago, and I'm looking forward to getting updated just because it's hard to keep up with all the great things you're doing. But among the reasons, the fact I was eager to speak with you on the show again today is to discuss your brand of philanthropy, which clearly has obviously an animal welfare emphasis and somehow seems to have actually taken on larger dimensions in the last few years since we did last speak. So I guess I'd like to start off by asking, when did you first start thinking, hey, I think I'd really like to donate on a more significant level, and when did you really start doing so?
Well, in part when I got the money to start doing it on a more significant level.
That's always helpful, right? Yeah, yeah. It's good to have the dough, yeah.
When I started out years ago in radio, it would have been I would never have imagined that I would have the money to do what I do now.
Well, absolutely, yeah. No, I can relate, being in radio still myself, yeah.
Well, I've always loved animals. And yeah. I've always, when I was a kid, I used to pick up strays and I'd try to nurse animals that had been hurt. I'd try to get them back on their feet and did the same sort of things for animals that thousands and thousands of kids do. And I just never got over it. I mean, I continued doing it all my life. And eventually I became active in the animal rights movement, and I realized that money was one of the problems. There were groups that worked and worked and worked, and they just didn't have the money to do some of the things that they wanted to do. And fortunately, I'm able to provide that money in many cases now.
Yeah. Well, so that's really interesting, I think, because I guess I'm sort of not only really appreciative, of course, for all you've done, but I'm really interested in it because, as I'm sure you're aware, not everyone who accumulates wealth chooses to pursue philanthropy. I mean, a notable sort of high-profile example that comes to mind at the moment would be Steve Jobs, who was obviously enormously intelligent, influential man, but as the Walter Isaacson biography makes clear, just not interested in philanthropy giving. And there's nothing wrong with that, of course. Again, just underscores that we're all different people. But did you have one attitude about philanthropy, you know, sort of along the way, obviously, as you say, I mean, it helps to have the money, but that doesn't necessarily mean that people are going to pursue that kind of giving. So what I'd be curious to know kind of what your philosophy has been and how it might have changed over years, not just by virtue of having the money, but just what your view of it, just philosophically.
Well, I, as I have said, I became interested in animals and have loved animals all my life. And it was only a natural thing for me to want to help animal-oriented organizations financially.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, I have I've been deeply touched by our wounded servicemen,
mm-hmm.
and I have helped their organizations as well. I was in I was a naval aviator during World War II, and my experience was just so different from what some of these young men have suffered. I enjoyed every moment of it. I look back on my time in the Navy with great appreciation, and receiving my wings of gold was one of the biggest thrills of my entire life. But some of these young men are coming back so horribly wounded and crippled for life,
mm-hmm.
that they deserve all the help we can give them, and I've been helping them too. And I don't know that that is so unique. I think there are many people who are doing what they can afford to do on behalf of our wounded servicemen.
Sure, and of course, Mr. Barker, one area where those two interests of yours kind of intersect is there is a lot of organizations that are training and providing service dogs to those wounded vets, either with, you know, those kinds of injuries that you're describing and or people with, suffering from PTSD. And I just think the work they're doing, of course, is just so poignant and powerful. So. If this is Talking Animals, if you just tuned in, we're speaking with Bob Barker, the retired host of The Price is Right, about the large-scale philanthropy he's directed towards an array of animal welfare organizations, projects, and programs. If you'd like to join the conversation, ask him a question, offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. So, Mr. Barker, in the last several days, as I've gotten the word out that you'd be my guest today, people clearly have been really excited and interested about your being on the show and hearing what you have to say. I've also heard from at least a handful of people who want to know if I can ask you for your help or financial support for their organization project. So I've told them that would be inappropriate, especially because I'll be seeking financial support for my own radio show. But I'm just kidding about that. But you know, my own experiences the last few days raise at least 2 points. One, you must be absolutely besieged by request for this kind of funding. And number two, I'm wondering how you'd feel about sharing the process involved for an organization to either apply for your financial support or just what criteria you use when you do decide to help underwrite a project or a program or just an organization at large.
Well, first of all, I have my own foundation.
Right.
It's called the DJ&T Foundation. Named in memory of my wife, Dorothy Jo,
mm-hmm.
and my mother, whose name was Matilda, but everyone called her Tilly.
Right.
And this foundation subsidizes spay neuters for dogs all over the United States, and we do it through local organizations. So if there is an organization that is into spay neuter, any place in the United States, we're in every state in the union, multiple organizations in some states, they can go on the internet and find the DJ&T Foundation, and they'll find the whole story right there and how they can obtain an application, and they certainly will be considered.
And so I want to tell people specifically the website for that is DJNT with an ampersand foundation.org, DJNTfoundation.org. So that's how spay and neuter organizations and local shelters could receive some funding or at least apply for that. But obviously some of the scope of your giving is so broad. Are you otherwise just kind of relying on some trusted advisors or just making these decisions strictly on your own? Or is there a process where if there is a new organization or not a new organization that says, gosh, we really have hit a bump here, I wonder if, Bob Barker would be able to help us on even, you know, a small level. Is there a mechanism in place for that?
Well, if if an organization that is not necessarily into spay-neuter,
mm-hmm.
rather than contacting the DJ&T Foundation and asking for an application, they can write to the DJ&T Foundation, and I will receive their letter sooner or later. It'll take a little time, but I'll see their letter.
Okay.
Now, so far as advisors are concerned, I do indeed have one advisor who I think knows more about the animal rights movement in general than probably anyone I've ever met. And this lady is, fortunately for me, the executive director of the foundation. Her name is Nancy Burnett, B-U-R-N-E-T, one T.
Okay.
And she has her own organization, Animal, I can remember it now, Animal Rights, I've suddenly gone blind.
Well, that's okay. We can search for it, certainly.
At my age, I sometimes forget my name is Monty Hall.
Right. Well, let's see
United
if we can.
United Activists for Animal Rights, UAAR.
Right.
That's the name of her organization, United Activists for Animal Rights.
Okay.
And I invariably discuss any contribution that I make with Nancy,
mm-hmm.
and I discuss it with other people whose organizations I've helped. And
sure.
In fact, they some of the people whose organizations I've helped will recommend other organizations. So it's kind of a network, and it works. Well, I'm pleased to believe that every organization I have helped has spent the money very wisely.
Well, that's the best, salute to, how you're making your choices and how pleased you are with, seeing, hey, this money is well spent. I try to help
the grassroots organizations.
Yeah.
Now some of the ones I help I help PETA, for example, which is, internationally known, and
sure.
I might add internationally productive, but I help Animal Defenders International, which is another big organization. I help Paws Sanctuary here in California, which is probably the finest sanctuary in the country.
Yeah.
But beyond that, I help a lot of organizations that don't have as much financial backing. And I avoid these wealthy organizations that spend their money on advertising on television and getting out pleas and taking credit for things that they don't really do much to make possible. They will take credit for things that others are doing. I avoid them.
And sounds like we might have hit a little nerve there. Any chance you'd care to reveal who you're referring to there? Or,
no,
yeah,
I don't
okay.
want to mention any names.
Okay.
But,
well, let me ask you this, Mr. Barker, because, another organization that's, probably not as large scale as some of those that you mentioned, but that we've alluded to already a couple times on the show here is the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. And I'd love to sort of talk about the things you funded for them, just because I consider it to be particularly significant, both in terms of the sum of money and the impact. And, of course, I'm referring to your providing the monies for Captain Watson and the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society to purchase that ship to combat more effectively the Japanese whaling.
Right.
Now, this may be apocryphal, but the way I understand that happened is that Captain Watson told you he thought he could put the Japanese whaling fleet out of business if he had $5 million, to which you were reputed to, at least have said to him, well, I think you have the skills to do that, and I have the $5 million, so let's get it on. Is that
you have it exactly right.
Okay.
And that's exactly how it happened.
Wow. Okay. And so at this point, having done that a few years back, and now there's, of course, a campaign currently underway, and the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society is in the news. I read a news item earlier about three of their activists having been taken aboard the one of the Japanese ships. I mean, how does it feel to hear about that, to get a news account about the current campaign, let's say, and your ship, the Bob Barker, is obviously playing a pivotal role?
Well, it's just a great satisfaction. I am delighted to say that the first year I made the contribution, and the first year they put the their aim was to bankrupt the whalers.
Yeah.
That was, they were going to destroy them economically. And they've done that. And the first year that they had the Bob Barker, the ship, the Bob Barker,
yeah,
is when they struck the final blow. The whaling fleet does not make any money. The whaling fleet is bankrupt. But unfortunately, it's being subsidized by the Japanese government now.
Yeah.
And I don't know why they're doing this. They're actually, I am told, using money that was intended for relief for these poor people who suffered such damage in the tsunami.
Absolutely, yeah.
And they are not making any money out of killing whales anymore, thanks to Paul Watson and the Bob Barker. And for that to have been accomplished is a satisfaction beyond description for me.
It's so great, but isn't it so odd that it almost seems like on sort of backwards principle that, as you say, there's no financial reason, and it was always kind of nefarious what the supposedly a research mission and all this other stuff.
That is an utter falsehood.
Right, right.
They don't use the blubber. They don't use anything, any of the internal organs. They only use the meat. And the meat is on the shelves of supermarkets in Japan and used in certain restaurants. And I understand that in Japan, the people are beginning to revolt. And they're not buying the whale meat, and they're not eating the whale meat. And I applaud them. I'm standing on my feet, giving them a standing ovation for joining us in trying to put a complete stop to this.
Yeah, well, it's clear that the Sea Shepherd folks, Captain Watson, and again, thanks to in no small measure to the Bob Barker, have really just kind of hobbled the whole operation, and it seems
they
have. Yeah, and I'll be curious to see how long this season even lasts before
right.
The Japanese folks are sent packing. But
you probably know, you obviously have researched this whole thing. As you probably know, last year they went home early.
Right, absolutely.
And we were hoping they wouldn't come out this year. But they did come out with more security provided by the country, by the government of Japan.
Yeah.
And they're not having any luck, though. The last time I heard anything from Paul, he said they'd managed to get only one whale.
Yeah.
And that's just wonderful.
Well, it's one whale too many, but it's
even the one.
Right, a lot fewer than normal. And yeah, if I were a betting man, I would bet that they will also go home early this season as well. We can only hope. Well, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Bob Barker. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org. And let's get a caller, at least one of the callers involved in the conversation. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Bob Barker. Thanks, I know you've been holding for a while.
Hello, is it me?
It is. It's your turn.
Hi, this is Pat from Sarasota with the Soul Purpose Band.
Okay.
I just wanted to say, Mr. Barker, I've really enjoyed you over the years on The Price is Right, and it really meant something to me to hear you say that at the end, controlling the spay and neuter. And I used to wait to hear that part at the end every time just to make sure and to hear you say it was great, and I really appreciated it.
Well, Pat, thank you. I did that because one of our most tragic problems, so far as animals are concerned in our country, is overpopulation. There are just too many cats and dogs being born for all of them to have homes.
Right.
And the only solution is spay-neuter. So I have been described as the guru of spay-neuter. That's fine.
I've been aware of that fact my whole life, and because of you.
Well, thank you, Pat.
There's just one more thing I wanted to say. The part that you did in the Adam Sandler movie was the funniest thing I've seen on television in years, and thank you so much for that.
Well, you know, I made that movie. I was in that movie in 1994, and I continued doing Price until 2007. And I never, once that movie was released, I never taped a show that the audience didn't want to talk with me during the commercials about Happy Gilmore. And particularly young men. Young men loved that picture. And
it was very funny.
They'd ask me, could you really whip Adam? Could you really beat up Adam? And I tell them, are you kidding? He couldn't whip Regis Philbin.
Pat, thank you so much for your call. We're going to move along here, but thanks again for your call. So, that people really, really enjoyed that, partly because, again, it was just kind of so shocking to see you in fisticuffs with Adam Sandler, but a lot of fun. Let's take another caller. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Bob Barker.
Hello.
Hi, it's you.
Hello.
Hi, it's you. Last chance.
Oh, okay. Duncan, this is Marilyn Weaver, and I'm trying to call in on the Bob Barker.
You're on the air live, Marilyn. You're
Hello?
On the air live.
Right now?
Right now.
Hello, Marilyn.
Talking.
Turn off your radio. Turn down your computer. Whatever you got going, that's why you're getting confused. You are on the air, Marilyn. Last chance, or I'm going to have to move on.
Yes, please. Mr. Barker.
Yes.
I just want to let you know that you sponsored Pam Boris to open a spay-neuter clinic in Pinellas Park in Central Florida here, and I helped her with that endeavor, and I want to personally thank you for that. I have been doing animal work for 25 years and didn't get very far because we had the same problems, and so just recently I read Julie Lewin's book called Get Political for Animals and Win the Laws They Need, and I organized a political action committee for animals. And I just want to let you know about it and ask what you think about that, because I think laws are the way to go, or we can't do anything. And I think it's important to start, as you mentioned, with grassroots groups locally. Do you know of any other people that are doing what I'm doing?
I do not. However, I can assure you that I started doing it some time ago, and it's working beautifully. And I'll tell you what I'm doing. I have set up endowment funds in 8 of the finest law schools in the United States. And I did this beginning with Harvard because I thought that we need new and more stringent laws, and we need the laws that we have to be enforced. And if we can begin to get animal rights law into the minds of these young people who are in the finest law schools in the country, it can affect how they handle things in the future, if they become, particularly if they go into politics and are in a position to make laws. But in any event, it is spreading all over the country. Law schools which to whom I have made no contribution whatsoever are starting these courses in animal law. And now I've even got it started I went to Drury University in Springfield, Missouri. And I started an undergraduate school in undergraduate school there. And it is beginning to be duplicated by other universities around the country. So I'm working on it, and you're working on it. Between the two of us, maybe we'll get something done.
Well, that's fantastic. And, of course, you know, our elected officials mostly just want to get elected. The issues don't seem to be of paramount importance to them. It's whoever will help get them elected, and that's what they fight for. And so my organization is not going to give these people money at all. We are going to get out the vote for them. If they will produce animal protection legislation, we will support them in a nonpartisan way. We don't care what the political affiliation is. We're single-oriented.
Well, now you're in Florida.
Yes, I'm in Florida.
Let me tell you about
the Tampa
one
Bay
congressman.
Area.
There's a congressman in Florida. His name is Bill Young.
Yes, I know him.
You know him?
Well, he used to be my congressman.
Well, you
at
know
one
of
point.
Him. He has helped.
I know of him.
Well, he has helped in everything that we have proposed to protect animals. He is a genuine defender of animals and a man that deserves all the help we can possibly give him. Bill
Thank
Young.
You for telling me this, because I'm going to marshal the troops here. I'm very involved with a lot of groups here, and I network with all the animal groups, and so I will get this information out, and I will work with him on our state legislation.
Great.
as well as federal.
Well, right now, he's helped us on federal legislation. He's working with us right now on a bill, right? I was just in Washington lobbying for it, and he was right in the middle of the whole thing.
All right, Marilyn, I'm afraid we got to move on. We're just almost out of time with Bob, and I have a couple of other quick things I need to address with him. But it sounds like you had a good conversation, and it sounds like you'll be maybe sending something his way as well.
Yes, I will. Thank you so
all right.
much.
Thank you, Marilyn. So we are speaking. We're in the tail end of speaking with Bob Barker. This is Talking Animals. Of course, Bob Barker is the retired host of The Price is Right, and as we've heard now once again, directed all kinds of philanthropic efforts towards an array of animal welfare organizations, programs, projects, legislation, and as well as academia, as we've just touched on as well. And so we have maybe just a minute or two left, and if you want to quickly try to get in at 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org, we can do that. But speaking of legislation, one of the many things, I know we're not going to have time to cover everything I had in mind, but one of the things, you know, we had the circus for in town last week. Mr. Barker Ringley was in town, and we spoke, in fact, on this show with Deborah Nelson, the Pulitzer winner who wrote the fantastic expose on Ringley Brothers for Mother Jones magazine. But I know that's another important issue to you, the circus, and I know you were involved with sort of announcing the Traveling Exotic Animal Protection Act. I think you were there when they announced the new bill. And I just wondering if you might briefly describe what that bill is or what it intends to do.
That act will end the use of exotic animals, lions, tigers, elephants, in traveling shows. It won't change anything for the shows that are stationary,
mm-hmm.
but animals cannot be traveled around the country to perform. And it would, of course, end the use of elephants that are suffer so terribly in circuses.
Yeah. And what's your?
And I might add, this Bill Young I talked about is one of the co-sponsors of that bill.
Right. No, I figured, and that's what made me want to bring that up. And also Jim Moran, probably.
Jim Moran, right.
Yeah, he's really amazing on behalf of the
he's
animals.
Tennessee, isn't he? I think he is.
I thought he was actually local, like Virginia or D.C. area, because I've seen him at speak at some things that are locally based. But either way, he's terrific. Yeah. So, and what do you think the prospects of this bill passing are?
Well, everyone with whom I talked when I was back there lobbying for mm-hmm. it, was optimistic. They think it'll take a little time, but
yeah, of course.
I'll tell you what, it has Ringling Brothers worried.
Yeah.
We hardly got out of town, and they were hitting the streets there,
yeah.
walking up and down those long halls trying to put a stop to this, but they haven't made much of an impact yet.
Yeah, well, believe me, yeah, I know what you mean. They pulled out all the stops. People forwarded me a few emails that they had gotten, you know, sort of under the guise of, hey, don't let a American institution be threatened, and mom and you know, apple pie and all this. And, you know, it was very, of course, very skillfully done. But it was clearly Ringling, you know, reacting to the announcement of that bill. And,
right.
Yeah. So, well, Bob Barker, thank you so much. We are just about now at the end of our time, but I really, really appreciate you making the time to join us again on Talking Animals. And again, just, appreciate all the great work and help that you've given to, at the most basic level, all the animals that we care about and all the people that are trying to help them. So thank you again.
Duncan, I must thank you. It is making people aware of the problems is what we must do, because Americans love animals and they try to help them if they're aware.
Right.
And to talk with someone like you, who obviously knows what he or she is talking about and cares, is just wonderful. I really appreciate this opportunity, and I wish you the very best in the future.
Well, thank you, Mr. Barker. Flattery will get you everywhere, my friend. So, thank you again, and keep up the great work.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. All right, I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. There'll be a prize at David Bowie Best of CD to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune. In a moment, we'll chat with our own Libby Boussalis, who decided to go vegan starting this very week. Right now, though, it's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. right. Perhaps not surprisingly, lots of people seem to know this one. We're going to take them quickly so we can get to Libby quickly. We'll take them in the order they came. Hi, you're on Talking Animals. Can you name that animal tune?
Yeah, is it Cat Scratch Fever by non-animal rights activist Ted Nugent?
It is. And, you know, I've had this conversation with somebody who said, hey, do you ever have people on the show you don't agree with? And I'm going to do more of that this year. And years ago, I tried to have Ted Nugent on the show just because I thought it would be interesting. And I'm going to try that again this year. That's part of my New Year's resolution, to mix it up more and get some people that, you know, don't agree with me, don't agree with other guests. So, anyways, but you are correct, sir. What is your first name?
It's Chris.
Chris, okay, I'm going to put you on hold and then come back and get your information where we can send off that that CD. But thanks for listening and congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, right now I want to welcome Libby Bousalis to Talking Animals. And again, if you've been listening to the show for any length of time, you hear me at the very end of each show. Thank and acknowledge Libby as Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant. So she is part of the family, but that sort of ties into why we're talking to her today in a way. Libby, are you there?
Hi, Duncan. How are you?
Good. Thanks for doing this. Now, in the interest, again, of full disclosure, we should reiterate that you're part of the Talking Animals family. I'd say staff, but that might imply you're drawing even a modest salary, which sadly you aren't. But anyways, let's start off with that. How long have you been affiliated with the show?
Oh, wow. I guess it's been a few years now.
Yeah.
It's been a while. I mean, I've been a big fan ever since I have been in the pet industry. So I'd say it's been at least 2 years, hasn't it, Duncan?
Yeah, I would say at least that, maybe more. And again, just quickly should add that you not only help out with the show, but that you've helped out with both Talking Animals festivals. But let's get to the real reason that we're talking today. You decided to go vegan starting this week. So if you wouldn't mind, walk us through the decision and what factors led to that decision.
Well, it's been a long time coming, I'd have to say. I've always been an animal lover, and it's just come down to practicality and, you know, just a little bit of discipline that's been able to help me go through with this decision to modify my diet, my lifestyle to be more animal friendly and also for my own health selfishly. So it's been a long time coming, but finally I said it's time, and a lot of different factors came into it for prompting me to do it at this time, but
was there a final factor that said, okay, I've been thinking about this, but boom, this has kind of pushed me all the way into it?
I watched a lot of movies. More specifically, the straw that broke the camel's back, which I shouldn't even say, right?
Well, it's dicey. It's dicey, Libby, but I think we'll allow that one. Yeah.
Okay. It was Forks Over Knives, and that was, all the movies that talk about the pet industry, the animal industry, the food industry, they're all terrible, but the Forks Over Knives was a thing that was recommended by my husband's boss, that he follows a vegan diet. And after watching that, it was over. It was more, you know, it was focused on, you know, the health aspects. And, you know, it was always terrible for me to know that I'm eating an animal product and how that got to my plate. I kind of was able to turn a blind eye to. And after a while, that just wasn't good enough. You know, I know where it comes from, and I don't like where it comes from, and I don't like what it does to my health and my body.
So once that last factor, and it may or may not involve a camel and a straw, et cetera. So you started this week, if I'm not mistaken?
Yes, and it's been so hard in ways that I didn't even really expect.
Tell us about some of those ways, because one of the reasons I thought this would be a good conversation to have is that there, you know, there may or may not be people on some, you know, level that feel much the same that you have and haven't quite, decided to do it. But I think it's important and illuminating for people to hear, you know, kind of what led to it and how it's going.
Yeah, you know, the first reaction of some people were, you know, you're crazy. How are you going to get your protein? I've been called a hippie. I mean, people have been called worse things, but other people have been really supportive and, you know, giving me text messages about every mealtime. What are you eating? What are you finding? And, it hasn't been hard, eliminating these foods from my diet, but it's been hard finding meals and ways to follow this diet.
Mm-hmm.
The supermarket, I mean, it's almost impossible to find the things that I want. So I went to some more, you know, the whole food type markets, and
yeah.
been able to find some vegan options, but some of them have been really not so good. Some of them have been great, but I'm really having to relearn how to eat and how to prepare meals.
And what kind of reaction, I mean, you've said the thing about people saying you're crazy and calling you a hippie, but I mean, in your more immediate sort of circle, including your immediate family, I mean, how has that been? Have people been, supportive, mixed? How has that gone?
Well, my husband and my sister-in-law have decided to try and go along with the diet, and my sister-in-law is much more crafty in the kitchen than I. So she has been sharing recipes and everything, so she's been really supportive. My mom's a registered nurse, and she at first said, you know, how are you going to get your animal protein? How are you going to eat protein?
Yeah.
But she's actually helped me go shopping and, you know, read the labels, so she's been really supportive. And other than that, people have just been interested and kind of, you know, probably watching from the sidelines, seeing what's going to happen.
Right. And did you, because I know, you know, when a lot of people sort of make this decision either through a cumulative thing of reading and seeing films like Forks Over Knives, et cetera, or again, back in the Oprah days, there might be something there. And of course, now more sort of filling that same sort of role would be Ellen. I mean, did you say to yourself, okay, I'm going to try this for X amount of weeks, or I'm going to try this till, you know, some certain month? Or did you just kind of say, I'm just going to do it and I'm going to, you know, kind of see how it goes? Did you set yourself any kind of window of time? Or
I thought about setting a time limit for it. My sister-in-law said 2 weeks she was going to do it with me. I'm hoping this is going to be a more permanent change.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for a lot of different reasons. So I'm hoping this is permanent, but, you know, I've given myself like a 60-day window to see how it goes. And, of course, I'm working with my doctor to make sure that my health is maintained and everything like that. So
yeah,
I'm putting a 60-day limit on it, but I'm hoping it's a permanent thing.
Yeah, well, that's great, really, 60 days, because I think a lot of people that sort of authors and other experts who sort of propose this for, you know, for folks who, you know, just haven't taken this kind of plunge before, sort of you actually even put it closer to like, hey, try it for 3 weeks. Just try it, but go full on for 3 weeks. And, you know, normally I think the thinking there is that after 3 weeks, if you really commit to it, that then you're not going to stop, that's just the initial 3 weeks, but that you're going to say, hey, this really wasn't so hard. Yeah, there was a learning curve about shopping and eating and some of the other things. But that, you know, a lot of times that 3 weeks becomes indefinite.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that you've sort of committed, it sounds like, to 2 months, it sounds like, you know, that's even more likely, to sort of be ongoing after that 2 month period.
Yes.
So, well, cool. So, here's the thing, Libby. Now, can we sort of check in with you, every, you know, couple, 3 weeks or so and get updates on how it's going and, you know, how you're feeling and, you know, struggles and challenges, but also, you know, cool things that you feel might have happened along the way?
Well, hopefully you'll be checking in with a skinnier me.
Okay. Well, yeah, there is that immediate virtue, I think, by all accounts. So, but yeah, I just think it might be interesting for our listeners, especially since you are, again, part of the family, to really sort of chart this and just sort of follow along with you to the extent you're comfortable sharing that kind of information with us. So, maybe we'll try that every 2 or 3 weeks, just a little phone call like this and just see how it's going.
Sure. And thanks for allowing me to follow up. Bob Barker, that was amazing.
Oh, thanks. Okay, well, cool, Libby. Well, thank you again for talking with us, and we'll keep tabs on this. And thanks again for all your help, of course, for the whole Talking Animals world.
Thanks, Duncan. Take care.
All right. All right, we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. We'll be back next Wednesday, January 18th, with another edition. I hope you'll join us then. I also hope you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all archives, podcasts, and past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. That's all found at TalkingAnimals.net. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant, the one you just heard, is Libby Busalis. My thanks to her. As always, I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Stay tuned for the All Souls edition of It's the Music, airing next from noon to 3 and hosted today by some guy named Duncan Strauss. We're closing out today's show, as always, with an animal tune. This is Galactic, who came through town last weekend with the track called Funky Bird, taking us up to the NPR News on WMNF Tampa. And then the second part of my doubleheader kicks in when I sit in for Scott Elliott doing the All Souls edition of It's the Music, noon to 3 today. But he'll be back next week. Fret not. All right, thanks for listening. We'll catch you next Wednesday, 11 a.m. on Talking Animals. Take care.
Washington, I'm Janine Herbst, a French television